Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer, Microsoft. Our guest today oversees and implements the technical strategy for Microsoft's Defense Department, civilian, and intelligence community businesses. Ms. Adams joined Microsoft Sales in 1999 and has held several leadership positions as the Director of Western Microsoft Technology Center and most recently the CTO of the Federal Civilian Business. Ms. Adams also has authored several books on the topics of software integration and web development over the past decade. She's a graduate of George Mason University, Yahoo. I love George Mason. Two of my kids go there, I might add, where she earned her bachelor's degree in information systems. Susie, first off, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Susie, you've been at Microsoft Federal for the last 15 years, and you progressed from being a systems engineer to being the chief technology officer. So tell us a little bit about your journey before Microsoft. How did you get to Microsoft?
Sure. So before Microsoft, when I came out of school, just like most folks in this area, you typically go to work in the IT field, working for a systems integrator that's doing government consulting. So that's exactly what I did. I joined Tidewater Consultants, and my first as a developer, working on Clipper programs, for the Navy, so developing systems for the Navy. From there, I just followed pretty much the industry trends as software development came along. I was actually one of those people that went kicking and screaming into the Windows age, never thought the mouse would ever take off because I was really a DOS developer and developed in assembly as well. Became a PowerBuilder developer, an Oracle DBA, and was pretty much just into the systems integration. And my last job right before Microsoft, a gentleman by the name of Jonathan Zuck, who many may know that are listening to this, he's still in the local area, came to me and said, I want you to present at this conference. And he said the conference would have about 30 people in the audience. Now, I hadn't really presented publicly since probably college, a college class. So I practiced, walked in, and there were 800 people there. I literally could not carry my water glass down. And from then on, I learned to speak publicly. And so Microsoft saw me present at a conference, which it's a little odd to see a woman presenting at a developer conference. And they asked me to come interview for a sales position, which I frankly laughed at because I never thought I'd ever get into sales. And that's how I ended up at Microsoft.
That's so great. Now, if we go back, you mentioned college. Your degree is in information systems. So were you one of those people who knew from, 5 years old that you wanted to work with computers?
No, because I don't think computers really existed the way we know when I was 5 years old. In fact,
they were certainly a lot bigger. That's for sure.
In fact, my first college class was with punch cards at George Mason, which frankly turned me off to computers in the very beginning, because if you haven't ever played with punch cards, it's pretty tough. I would say, the first time I ever really got to look at computers, I was a senior in high school, and my math teacher had been taking a class at the local community college in basic programming. And so she bought her own computer and brought it in, and it was sitting there, and she taught a couple of us how to program. And I wrote my first program, which was keeping my basketball stats. And that's when I really started to get the love for the challenge of solving a computer problem.
Was there anybody in your background, in your life, who influenced you to go into technology?
Absolutely. My father. My dad is worked for IBM for years, recently retired 5 years ago. He's an acoustical engineer, so he designed sonar for subs. So needless to say, there was a lot of math in our house. So he absolutely encouraged me and supported me to go in technology. And it, in fact, many times said, you're either going to be an engineer or an engineer. So...
That's funny because my dad, coincidentally, was also an engineer and also worked on acoustics. And I ended up as an English major, so he probably thinks he failed with that one.
Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technologist, Microsoft Federal. Susie, you've had your whole life in STEM degrees. You got your undergraduate degree. As you put it, your whole life was kind of surrounded by math. Today, very few women are entering those types of sciences. As far as STEM degrees, 50% of the degrees awarded are to women that are following biology type degrees. But computer science, for example, is only 18.2%. And I read another study that they think that that is actually going down. So what would you recommend for us to do to help encourage women and minorities to pursue a degree and a career in STEM?
Well, it's funny. My niece is a senior in college right now, and I can remember when she was trying to decide what she wanted to do. And my sister's also in technology, worked for EDS for years. And she looked at us and said, I don't want to do what you guys do. That's just really boring. And I said, well, how do you know what we do? She goes, you just sit in front of a computer and type all day. And I'm like, actually, that's not what we do. So I think there's a big misconception about what a job in IT really is, and that you get to use not only your technical skills, but you get to use your interpersonal skills. And there's a much wider variety of things you can do in the IT field. And so I think a lot of people have misconceptions. They think it's all programming, or, you know, kind of the geek slips something under the door to you. You have to kind of be a nerd to do it. And I think that's a big perception that when I talk to girls in high school and younger, I try to, you know, persuade them, hey, don't think about it like this. There's lots of different roles that you can have and jobs you can have in the IT field. So I think that's one big thing. The second thing is, I think there's a stereotype where it's just a male-dominated field, and there's a little fear to going into a male-dominated field for some of the women. So,
you've been in this field for a couple of decades now. Have you seen it change for women since you first started? And if so, in what way?
Yes. I don't think it's probably changed as much as I would have thought it would for women. You know, when I started, I think I was, there was two women in a group of probably 30 developers. And it was probably for the, not for them lack of trying to hire women. It's the fact that there weren't just very many women developers out there at the time. Now I still, it's still very similar. I think in sales, in the sales role that I've had over the last 15 years, there tends to be more of an equal distribution of, from a gender perspective. But I do still see in the technical ranks, there's still very few women that are still technical and in the technical trenches. So I, you know, and that's kind of unfortunate. I would have thought that would have grown more.
And do you think that's because women are opting out of the technical roles? You made the comment when you started your career that you think, you know, that disparity was because that was, there were just that few women developers. Is that still what's going on? Or is there, are there more women who might want to be in the field, but just for whatever reason aren't getting hired or aren't getting promoted?
I think women tend to go in when they start, they tend to go in and become a developer, and then they quickly move on to other roles and other jobs. They see other things that interest them, and they tend to get out of that technical. I don't know why. I actually really like the technology challenge, and I tell people, if you want to get into computers, you better like puzzles, because that's really all it is. Don't ever expect it to work, because it's probably not going to work at some point, and you're going to have to solve that problem. If you don't like to solve problems and like to solve puzzles, it's probably not going to be a great career for you in the technical trenches. So I look at some of the women that have moved up, and most of my friends, in fact, that had the same information systems degree, ended up taking a marketing track in the IT field, or a true just consulting, information consultant.
So I have four children, Susie, and three boys and a girl. And when I used to go into the toy store, Toys R Us, there'd be aisles, and there'd be the pink aisle, and then there'd be other aisles. And I was talking to another parent the other day, and she said, well, she decided she was going to, instead of getting the pink toy that the daughter wanted, she was going to get her a poster of a, you know, anatomy, a poster, because she wanted her to pursue some kind of medical science. And I looked at her, and I think you got to start encouraging girls young. So, you know, with my daughter, I bedazzled, no kidding, her laptop. And she really got much more into it, because, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a girl, but you want to pursue that. Do you find that there's enough being done to help encourage young girls to pursue, you know, because that's really when they start forming who they are and what they think they can do?
You know, that's a great question. So two different things. We do something called DigiGirls. I don't know if you're familiar with DigiGirls. Microsoft sponsors. It's, and there's multiple events that they have. But I used to run the technology center, and we would have local high schools come in, and was literally 40, 50 girls would come in, and we'd give them different tasks to do. They would get to invent a new Microsoft product. They'd get to market the product. Some would get to play with robotics and get to build things. And I found that this was really their first exposure at that level to IT and in the way that we look at it from a professional perspective, which I found I was actually a little shocked about, you know, when I first started doing the DigiGirls. I have another niece who happens to be in seventh grade out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I got to go to one of her teacher days, teacher parent days for my sister, and I walked in, they had a robotics lab, and I walked in, and she was almost the only girl in there. And I found that the teacher, even though the teacher was a woman, she was really gravitating to the boys who were really, you know, doing all the work with the robotics, and she couldn't get a word in edgewise. And so I pulled her back and I was like, wait a minute, get in here, get sharpen your elbows here. You have to get in there and actually, you know, say you want to do this stuff and, you know, stick up for yourself. And I think that was, you know, something I really didn't realize that it was starting at that young of an age.
Today, we're speaking with Suzy Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal. Coming up, we'll find out what advice Suzy gives to her federal government customers. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Suzy Adams, Chief Technology Officer, Microsoft Federal.
Suzy, your role at Microsoft is to help advise the federal government about technology issues and also to help guide Microsoft's strategy with regard to the federal government. So the government is grappling with some pretty big issues these days around cloud, mobility, transparency, cybersecurity. How do you help them navigate those waters?
So that's exactly what I spend most of my time doing at Microsoft today. It's almost always talking about the cloud. In fact, they kind of joke and call me the cloud lady. I had a couple of people call me that at work the other day. I think that the biggest challenge is the pace of IT for the federal agencies and the fact that, you know, we've moved into the fifth generation of computing at lightning fast speed, and nothing in the federal government moves at lightning fast speed. not from a contracting perspective, it's very difficult for them to be agile. And if you look at some of the work they're doing with groups like 18F and the Digital Services Group that's just popped up, and looking at agile development, I think as they start to look at those things and be able to implement those things across federal agencies so they can take advantage, they'll have an easier path forward. But typically what I'm doing right now is I meet with federal agencies and just help them kind of understand what's the best way that they can move to the cloud. What applications are good targets, are the right candidates, which aren't, because not every application should move to the cloud. It could be the sensitivity of the data. It could be the fact that it's just an old application and is too chatty or is just not architected appropriately for the cloud. There's a whole host of different reasons. And just walk them through the things that they should consider as they look to make that move to the cloud. And not, you know, it's not an all or nothing type of move. And so it really is just taking a look at the solutions that are out there today, asking the vendors the hard questions about security, privacy, and trust. And I think a lot of folks, you know, they look at the shiny object out there and they really don't do their homework to look at the terms and conditions, all the different things that go into purchasing a cloud. And so I spend most of my day talking to federal agencies about cloud.
So Microsoft was one of the first vendors, big or small, that came out and said that they were going to have a cloud that was focused on the federal government and eventually then go through the FedRAMP process. How hard is it and how much of it is your job to help guide Microsoft to let them know what they need to be doing in order to meet the needs of federal customers, like not just a public cloud, but a Fed
government
cloud? Yeah.
In fact, that's a large part of my job, is to help our corporate product groups and teams understand what the federal specific requirements are from a security perspective. So for FedRAMP, for example, the very first product we took through the FedRAMP process was Office 365, so Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. And it was a big learning experience for us. In fact, with the FedRAMP Program Management Office, we've been working with them now for 2.5 years, kind of hand in hand to share best practices. And they've helped us understand, you know, what's the best way to get through the process. And we've actually learned a lot about how to architect and how to create our packages so that they can be building blocks and make it easier, not only for agencies, but for Microsoft to get through the process. And so it's been a huge learning experience. And I think, you know, when we look at all of our products, our goal really is to take all of our products and have them be available for the federal marketplace. I think the biggest thing that I think all the cloud vendors are struggling with right now is where's that waterline to be able to build a cloud for all federal agencies? And if you look at the FedRAMP requirements, FedRAMP High, I'm hearing is going to come out very, very soon. Then you have the DoD Security Requirements Guide that's out. And you look at these different requirements and, you know, the train's already left the station. All the major cloud vendors have created a cloud for federal, state, and local tribal. And now you've got folks saying, no, I think I just want a federal cloud, or no, I'm really special and I want my own cloud for my, you know, for my particular agency. And I think that's where it really gets complicated, because, you know, cloud's all about economies of scale. And when you start to build these special communities of interest, those economies of scale really go away. And so I think that's kind of where we're looking. And it's not that cloud providers like Microsoft or Amazon or Google can't meet the security requirements. It's that the physical and logical isolation is still, you know, basically data access and data location matter. The way you implement the security controls, you can implement them all, but data access and location matter from a legal perspective. And that's what we're running into now.
Susie, recently on a panel, and I'm going to paraphrase what you said, I heard you say that the budget challenges may actually help the adoption of cloud computing. What do you mean by that?
You know, cloud, it's all about economies of scale. If you just look at infrastructure as a service and the data center consolidation efforts underway, being able to move a public-facing website to, you know, Azure, just from a virtual machine, taking those five virtual machines and running them there, you go from sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars because people were hosting them in private data centers, you know, running them on, you know, large server farms that they didn't need, but only needed during certain times, right, to meet the capacity levels, to be able to do elastic computing and only on consumption basis. And they would take these things that were costing, you know, sometimes $1 million to run a year down to, you know, 100,000 or even less, 10,000 to run. And so I think when you start to look at those economies of scale, you start to balance, you know, where does that privacy and security, you know, balance against the cost of being able to do this or provide this particular citizen service? And you start to take, you start to balance those things out.
There's been several debates out there that says is debating the true cost savings that you can get with cloud. In your experience, and now Microsoft, as Gigi mentioned earlier, was one of the very first organizations to offer a government cloud. Are you seeing the realization of those savings for your end users that adopt cloud computing? Because it's, you know, on the surface, it looks like you can make a dollar go a long way by leveraging an infrastructure like that Microsoft offers.
We are. I think the challenge is up front. It usually takes some money to save some money. And I think that's the big misnomer out there, that they think they can just kind of go, like, we have a cell phone, flip a switch, and you can change providers and just simply move over a workload. And when it's an enterprise workload, it actually takes money to migrate that workload to the cloud, right, to deprovision what you currently have here and to gain that benefit. And so I think we've seen agencies start to realize some of the cost benefits now. I think we'll see that improve over the next 2 years.
You mentioned cyber, and cybersecurity as being probably the biggest obstacle. The president certainly has been addressing recently cybersecurity, and certainly it has been in the top of the news. Do you think the government is doing enough or maybe doing too much around the area of cybersecurity? Do you have any advice in that area?
I don't know that I want to comment on the most recent legislation, but I think what they're doing with FedRAMP right now and FedRAMP High is a great step in the right direction. Frankly, I wish we could do more there. I think if you talk to the FedRAMP PMO, they wish they had a bigger budget in the gov budget to be able to process things so there wasn't a backlog. So I think we definitely could do, you know, a better job in that arena so that we can get through the process faster. I mean, getting through it in 6 to 8 to 9 months is, I mean, that's tough. It's not very agile. We update our cloud services on a monthly basis, new features roll out, and people need to have those services accredited, and we have a backlog. And the fact that, you know, these packages are thousands of pages. So to have an agency review these things, to feel confident, to get a third-party auditor in and test these things, I mean, it's just, it's a somewhat cumbersome process. So I think we can do a little better there to kind of, again, draw that water line. And I think a really good step with the Department of Defense's security requirements guideline is they're building on top of FedRAMP, which we applaud because now we have a single goal. FedRAMP High will hopefully also, you know, come in line with where DoD is right now, which will hopefully make it easier for us to be able to show, you know, here's the security posture of our system.
Susie, what advice would you give to small companies? You know, Microsoft is a big company, has a huge presence in the federal government and has a lot of resources at its disposal, as does Google, as does Amazon, some of the others. What advice would you give to a small company, though, who really wants to, may have some innovative technology, cloud technology, and wants to be able to do business with the federal government, and federal government may really want to do business with them, but they might not have the resources to get through something as protracted as FedRAMP.
So when I look at small businesses, it really depends on what they're selling, obviously. We work with a ton of small businesses who have value-added solutions that they want to run on top of, say, for example, Azure. And we've actually stood up a marketplace that will allow them to literally show off their solution and then sell it through that marketplace sitting on top of Azure. And so we've created a program that will help those vendors leverage our FedRAMP work and our package and only have to do the work that they need to do for their whatever their solution is that's running on top of our platform. So I think that's one really good way, you know, for smaller vendors to not build their own infrastructure out, but to leverage the other large vendors that are out there, at least for the core, you know, physical infrastructure and from an infrastructure as a service perspective. For the folks that are standing up private clouds, there's still a need, clearly, for private clouds. If you look at, you know, anything in DoD or the intelligence community, people want those private clouds. They need those very secure data centers. They want them isolated only to a particular customer. And so, you know, for those folks, you know, FedRAMP has said they're not going to process the dedicated, that you have to basically create your own package and have the agency go through that process with you, which I think is the right approach as well. We sell a dedicated Office 365 solution, and we're having to do the same thing. And it's a smaller package because it's a smaller infrastructure. It doesn't have as large a footprint in the data center. So I think those folks are probably in pretty good shape as it stands today.
Today's guest is Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal. Coming up, we'll ask Susie about her career and how she's been so successful in a male-dominated field. You are listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer, Microsoft Federal.
Susie, you've had a really successful career, and often when we're talking to the successful women that we have here, we make the analogy that Sheryl Sandberg makes in her book Lean In, where she talks about your career being can be a jungle gym, not just a straight line. Yours, on the other hand, appears to have been a pretty straight line. And so is that an accurate representation? How do you think about that?
I don't know that I would call it completely a straight line. I don't think if you asked me 15 years ago if I would ever consider being the CTO of a sales organization or even working for Microsoft, I don't think I would have said this is where I thought I was going to go. I think things you run into and you meet people and mentors in your career that show you different facets of your strengths and help you take advantage of those strengths. And that's what happened to me. I mean, I would have never guessed that I would be completely comfortable standing on stage talking to people for a living. Right? That's basically what I do now. 15 years ago, you would have had to, you know, and you did have to drag me in kicking and screaming to go talk about technology publicly. So I think I'm not sure it's completely a straight line.
So how did you? That's really interesting. How did you get comfortable speaking in front of large groups of people?
Practice. Lots and lots and lots of practice and feedback from people. So it started out that very first presentation I talked about in the first segment. And then I actually did all day seminars to technical people, and the feedback I got was really quite hilarious. Because it was all mostly male dominated. So of the 500 people there, there'd be 20 women and, you know, 480 guys. And so I would present with Jonathan Zuck. And so we'd get these feedback, you know, slips, and you get the reviews back, and they were just comical, right, on the things. And so I learned a lot from doing that, got thick skin. And when you talk all day, you start to get comfortable. You know, by the end of the day, you can't really practice every single thing you're saying. And so I think that was great practice. And then just doing it over and over and over again.
Susie, according to Bureau of Labor and Statistics, the average tenure of a person in technology is just 3.4 years and 6.3 for management. You've way beat those odds at Microsoft. You've been there for over 15 years. What do you attribute your longevity to your current employer?
Smart people. So I love to learn new things. Microsoft has people, I think almost everybody I meet, especially if you go to corporate and talk to some of the folks on the development teams, they're just brilliant. And so it's fun to actually sit down and learn from them. And so there's never a dull day. It's not just, you know, I think it's the variety. I used to have a box on my desk, and if you talk to it, it would go, let me out of here and don't put me in a box. And that's kind of how I am. I like to see the big picture. I like to learn new things. And I like to surround myself with smart people smarter than me. And so that's the one thing that Microsoft can give you. So.
Does Microsoft have a male-dominated environment in the technology fields? And if so, do you think your path to success has been the same as your male peers, and any strategy or success secrets that you could share with our listeners?
No, I don't think it's been the same as many of my peers. I look at all the different people I work with. They've all had a different path to how they got here. Most, in fact, were not developers like myself in the sales arena. So I am a little different that way. If I had to say what helped contribute to my success was probably never giving up. And so there's a, you know, when you hit roadblocks in your career or you're afraid to take that next step. And I think that's the one thing if I had to go back and look at, I would have taken more risk. Right. I tended to go for 3 and 4 year gaps where I felt comfortable. And then I take a big risk and I change everything all at once, right? And really go out on a limb to do something new. I think doing that really helped me. But if you look at my career, I kind of got here late. You know, I didn't become the CTO for Federal until a couple years ago, whereas some folks would have done that in their early 40s. So,
you know, one of the things you said, Susie, reminded me, I heard somewhere that women, if there's 5 job requirements for a job, they will make sure that they meet all 5 of those job requirements before they even apply for the job. Whereas most men, if they meet any one of the 5, will say, well, heck, I've got that one and I can learn the other 4. And they'll go ahead and throw their hat in the ring. So has that been, sounds like maybe that was a little bit of your situation?
Absolutely. So it's almost... And I've read that too, and it definitely fits me. I look at a job description and I'll say, oh, I have to be able to do all these before I apply. Whereas my male counterpart, and I know because I watch it happen, they might not have any of those qualities, but they'll walk into that interview and they'll nail it, right? And literally get that job and move on because of their confidence. And, you know, there's something that's also called the gender confidence gap, where women just natively feel like this, that they have to be able to master everything before they can move on, where their male counterpart will literally just say, nope, I can do that job and move on and learn it, you know, on the fly. So yes, I definitely think that that's one of my good or bad qualities.
So clearly we put those expectations on ourselves. Do you think that those expectations are also thrust upon us by organizations?
I do. I don't know if they do it deliberately or intentionally. I think sometimes I'll just use an example. I went for a role to manage the technology center, and I knew I was going against, you know, several other male kind of, there was obviously the only female going for the job. And I know, the gentleman that was interviewing me had a pre-interview with me to find out why I wanted to do this. And just, he didn't know me and he wanted to understand, you know, where I was trying to go in my career. And he literally told me that, and he goes, now don't be upset if you don't get the job. We want you to be, you know, one of the technical people there. And I'm 100% confident he didn't say that to any of the guys that were going for the role. Right? And I know he didn't mean it, you know, in a bad way. I know he is a father of 4 girls. So it just happens to be, I think that that's the way they look at it. I had never done that. I had never opened a technology center. So therefore, you know, it wasn't on my resume. And I think there is some kind of, you know, underlying bias that way that is not intentional.
An unconscious bias.
Unconscious, yeah.
So you got that job, though.
I did.
And did that help at least to bolster your confidence that you could do something that you had never done before?
It did. Although I did feel like I had to prove myself more so than I thought I should have had to. So,
Susie, you know, you talked about your experiences and that confidence gap and how you achieved. But networking and resources are not always clear to women in technology. You've been in the field for a couple of decades. Do you have any advice on how to network or leverage resources to advance their careers? And does Microsoft have any formal programs in the area of mentoring?
We do have formal mentor programs. And I think they're a great tool. I'm not a huge fan of the formal only because I like to go and seek out my mentors. And that's typically how I've done this. And it's people I meet, people I happen to be in a meeting with, maybe I'm on a project with that I have something in common with, or they have a skill set that I'm looking, you know, to get some guidance on because I'd like to acquire that skill set. And so, and it's not just, you know, the mentors I've had have been both male and female. In fact, most male have been my mentors. And so, you know, the best advice I would give is, you know, to seek out mentors, to look for mentors. Don't look for mentors just in the formal sense of a mentor. Actually seek out folks that are either doing something you aspire to do and you want some guidance on how to get there. And don't be afraid to ask for help.
Are these mentors that you would advise somebody to seek out are not only in your company, but outside your company and in your network? How did you meet them?
Through different events, attending industry events, especially in the federal arena. There's, you know, a mirage of industry events out there. And so attending those events, networking with folks through work you do with, I do a lot of work with partners in my space. And so I tend to meet a ton of folks in the partner community that I have used, especially when I work on projects with them. And some of those have become my my mentors outside of Microsoft.
With somebody like yourself who've had such a successful career, would you think that you know, getting a mentor makes a difference in helping individuals out there maybe achieve success?
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, if I go back and look at, you know, the different things that I've done, the big changes in my career, like going to Microsoft, speaking publicly, doing, you know, all that wouldn't have happened if certain people hadn't come into my life from a career perspective. So
today we're speaking with Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal. Coming up, we'll find out what Susie likes to do when she's not at work. You are listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer, Microsoft Federal.
So, Susie, I think you mentioned earlier something about swimming and then basketball, keeping your statistics. So it sounds like you were maybe an athlete and like to play sports. Is that what your love is outside of work?
I'd like to say that I continued to play sports as much as I did when I was younger, but obviously age catches up with you. But yes, so I played college basketball. I swam. I played volleyball, almost any, you know, sport out there. So yes, so today I still enjoy working out. I belong to a kind of a CrossFit gym and attend and go to that as much as I can when I'm not working.
And so one of the things that is often said is that team sports does help to build confidence, as well as the idea that you win and lose as a team, and frankly, it helps to toughen your skin. Did you find that to be the case with your basketball and swimming?
Absolutely. You know, I have so many different experiences from being on the teams, whether it was in college or whether it was even with swimming, that I equate to, you know, building the teams that I've been on and that I've led. And so if we look at, for example, swimming, I swam for a summer team, and that summer team didn't have a lot of year-round swimmers, and we went against teams that had year-round swimmers. And it took, you know, kind of all 200 of us to win, but we won every single meet because maybe we didn't get first, but we got second and third in every single stroke. And so if you look at just that from a team perspective, if we had had 5 year-round swimmers that were good, we would have never won. Instead, we needed the whole team. And so I think a lot of that carries over. And I think people don't really realize how much it carries over to your professional career until until you're in your career for several years.
So shifting gears a bit, I know that you don't have children, but you do, in fact, have a pet who may be considered one of your children. So tell us a little bit.
Several pets, yes.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your pets.
I have a Weimaraner. He's my second Weimaraner. His name is Grady. He's 3 and crazy. If you've ever had a Weimaraner, they love to run and run and run. They will run all day if you let them. And then I just rescued a foxhound. No idea how old she is. We've gotten 4 and 8. So she's somewhere between 4 and 8. She just appeared at the beach where I have a place, and she didn't want to leave. So we couldn't find her owner. So now we have a foxhound too. So
she's adopted you instead of you adopting her.
Pretty much. She adopted Grady. she found the Weimaraner. So
today in the studio, we have Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal.
The current administration, Susie, has named many women to positions of leadership throughout the government, and most recently, Megan Smith, the CTO, to replacing the recently departing Todd Parks. She is coming from Google and only has a limited amount of experience in working with the government. Some people think that's great. Some people don't think so much. With your decades of experience, do you have any advice for her and if you were given that role, where would you start?
You know, I when I first started working in government, I was, you know, I grew up here. So I went to high school here. And so the government was pretty much all I knew. So, but I did have a stint where I walked away, and I was actually only doing commercial for about 6 years. And coming back was really tough. It was tough because I was used to a much faster pace. of adoption, of innovation. But we didn't have the political roadblocks that sometimes you have in the federal government. So, you know, my one advice to her was, you know, be patient. There are really smart people working in the federal government. There might be a lot of bureaucracy, but you can get a lot done if you're just patient to work through it. And, you know, from what would I do? That's a great question. I don't, you know, it's tough to change the way that things are going. I think there's some really good things going on with 18F. I think there's some good things going on with Mikey Dickerson and where he's going. I think I, you know, would continue to push for procurement reform, continue to push for the advances in the cloud and the adoption of these innovative services to improve citizen services. I mean, there's so much technology out there that they could use today. That is secure to be able to improve the experience for citizens at a much lower cost than we're doing today.
So one of the things you mentioned, Susie, was that when you came back into working with the federal government, it was a tough transition because of the pace and that things take a long time. One of the challenges I think the government has is attracting particularly millennials. And I've heard it lots of different reasons, but one of which just because the application process, if you want to work for the government, takes such a long time. Given kind of everything that you know and the fact that you've done both in your career, if you were a young person starting out, would you recommend a career in government or in sort of the government ecosystem?
You know, I would. And the reason I would is that if you look at the scale that you get to work on some of these big, giant problems, I mean, how many times do you actually stand up a website that every citizen in the United States is going to hit? You know, I mean, you can't do that in the commercial world, or very, very few companies that you could work for would you get that responsibility. And so you can get a lot of experience right out of the gate doing some really interesting things in the federal government. And so, yes, I would tell, you know, folks right out of school to apply for government jobs.
Susie, I totally agree with you. Not only do you get to do an unbelievably thing, good things, big things, but those good things can really make a difference in the world, too. So the government opportunity is huge for the young people out there. Now, I'm going to totally switch gears on you now, Susie. If you were to go back to seeing Susie Adams walking across that stage at George Mason University, getting her degree, what three pearls of wisdom or advice would you give her to help her achieve the success that you have, or maybe even achieve even greater results?
I would tell her to be more confident and to not second guess herself as much, because I tend to do that a lot. And I think it's actually set me back where, you know, so you have fears, but then if you're not confident as well, sometimes that can really throw you for a loop and you might not take or make some of the decisions or the choices that, it had you made them, would have furthered your career. And I can go back and think, you know, of multiple times that happened. I could have worked for Microsoft early on and I turned the job down. I had some other jobs in the dot-com world that I just didn't take that risk, where some of my friends did and they reaped the benefits of it multi-times. I would say that don't be afraid to take the breaks that might be given to you as a woman. So I was one of, you know, the folks that, I guess I was really naive. My dad, I'm one of three girls. So my dad, I didn't think, taught us that there was, you know, there's no gender bias. There's no, you're a woman, you're going to go to college, you're going to get a great job. That, you know, I didn't really have an idea that bias might exist in any way, shape or form. And I can remember a time where I was out in the Midwest. I had a job at a consulting firm and they went to go, the partner took me for a ride out in the country and we're going to visit a customer. And he says to me, so I don't want you to throw anything at me. So we're in the car. He goes, you're supposed to be promoted, but I got to promote, you know, John over here because he's got twins on the way and I thought I was going to die, right? Now, if I had just waited, he also told me at the same time, you know, you wait another year and we'll make you a partner. And I said, because I'm a woman? I was like, whoa, wait a minute. This doesn't, you know, and had I just, you know, now maybe that it wasn't the right decision, you know, for me at that time. But sometimes you're given, you're afforded things because you're a woman. Don't be afraid to use those cards, right? Guys, use those cards. You should use those cards too. And then I would say that, you know, when I want to have a voice or I have an idea, I need, sometimes I tend to get, I think in many women do when they're passionate, they get a little emotional about it. I'm not saying crying, but you can tell that you're passionate. And sometimes that doesn't come over well. And so the one thing I wish I had done much better in my younger career was get a grip on that, right? And get kind of that work persona on, to be able to tell my idea, to not have that emotion, to show my passion differently right? And not more professionally, just differently, so that my idea got across, was not taken in more of an emotional way.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Our guest today is Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal. Susie, I want to thank you for being with us today and for sharing your story and your advice. I know that listeners can learn more about you from going to Microsoft.com, but do you tweet? Do you have a blog? What other sites, what other resources do you have where they can find out more about you?
I don't have a personal blog, but I do blog through Microsoft quite a bit, and that's on our Microsoft Federal blog. And then I tweet a little bit. I don't tweet a lot, though.
Okay, so what's your Twitter handle?
Adams.Susie.
There you go. All right. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday mornings at 9 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.